I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
8:02 in the a.m. Some moving and shaking going on down in D.C. with the Nats. Davey Martinez out as the manager. Mike Rizzo, a week before the draft, is out as the GM. Jeremy, I didn't have a problem with some of the moves that Mike Rizzo made as a GM, draft or trades.
Well, I think the point that you're looking at this team is a lot of the success right now, or at least the three best players that are on the major league roster, all from that Juan Soto trade. So I don't know what was going on behind the scenes. They weren't spending money, but they're technically in a rebuild. Whether they're telling you that or not, once you trade off of Juan Soto, you know you're going to go through some lean years, but you're going to get back some pieces that take a while to develop. Their three best players are Mackenzie Gore, James Wood, and CJ Abrams. It makes you sick to your stomach realizing what you got from Machado, but he did have a year and a half left on his deal when they traded him. That being said, I didn't see this coming, especially before the draft. They didn't really sign anyone in the offseason. Like, they signed Mike Soroka, I don't know if that was last year or this past offseason, and he's looked better, even though he got blown up this weekend. But yeah, there weren't a lot of huge free agent signings for him. But again, I don't expect that with a team that's what I believe is in a rebuild.
So let's go to manager, because I'm not a big Davey Martinez fan anyway. Joe knows that. I was never a fan. I just wasn't. But the Nats are going to go to the rest of the season seemingly with an interim manager spot, right?
Yeah.
Orioles interim manager, Nats interim manager. What's the most enticing job to you?
I mean, I think if you're getting an opportunity, both are. But like, I think the Orioles has to be better from, I mean, you just had two really good years and you're having a down season. And now it's more about retooling and figuring out the offseason. And, you know, if you're a fan, nobody wanted this season, but the one thing I think is going to happen is that they're definitely going to spend money in the offseason.
See, I think you're in a perfect situation with the Baltimore Orioles. That's not me being a homer. It's based on what you just said. They both have young talent, good young talent. But based on what you said, I think this year is the outlier. I do. They had a very good back end of 22. They introduced themselves. A great 23. A 91 win. 91 wins was a step down from the year before. And they still got to the playoffs, and now this year. And they show signs this year that they're not really that bad. They show them signs when they're healthy.
Yeah.
This year, to me, is the outlier. I think this is the job that I would want, because you have an ownership group who just took over last year. They inherited a 101-win team. Then they go to the playoffs. And now, all of a sudden, in the year that they're really fully entrenched, they have this. I don't think there's going to be an ownership group more committed to trimming or fortifying this roster than the Orioles ownership group, to be honest with you, Jeremy. I don't think you're going to have a lot of ownership groups that are committed, but I don't think anybody's going to be more committed than this group.
I mean, I wouldn't expect that either, you know, especially looking at where they are now, what they're coming from. And again, this isn't a team that they did spend money in the offseason. But they didn't make any big splashes.
No, they didn't.
It was almost like filling voids from, like, you get Tyler O'Neill because Santander's losing. And when you looked at, by the way, it's kind of crazy to think that O'Neill hasn't played much and he might be just as good as Santander with that 100. They're regretting that right now.
Yeah, Santander move?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, so you look at that. And then
that's an organization that has the money. If he doesn't get it together next year, they'll.
Yeah.
I'll move on.
Absolutely. And then Corbin Burns, I mean, you lose out on him, and then you bring in Charlie Morton. In the beginning of the year, we all wanted to get rid of him. Like, don't let him pitch again. And now it's like, can he pitch every fifth day as long as he can because he's been that good? Yeah, man, it's a very weird season, but I still think this is a job that most managers should want.
Make a point that the Nats are the most enticing. What would make you say the Nats were more enticing?
I was just getting ready to say it's not division, because I think both teams are in tough divisions.
Right.
I would sit here and say, if you're looking at the core that you're building around that's very young with James Wood,
yeah,
CJ Abrams, and of course Mackenzie Gore, and there's other pieces there too, they need to find pitching. Find out why Mitchell Parker and Jake Irvin can't pitch on the road. They can only pitch at home. Because their ERAs are right around 4 at home and almost 6 on the road. Mm-hmm. When you add it together, none of it looks good. You know, and then you start looking at some of their position players. There's a lot of room for improvement. And I think the expectations, so here, I'll give you this. the expectations for the Nats aren't going to be as great as the Orioles next year. So if you're coming in, yeah. you have time to kind of implement.
Because you haven't done anything since, what, 2018?
Yeah.
Well, 2019. You won it all, right? Yep. 2019, yeah. So, yeah, I get that. I get that.
And the Orioles, and even that year was like when the Ravens won the Super Bowl. It wasn't expected. They made that huge run in the second half of the season to just get in the playoffs.
And when they got there, people still didn't think they would win. Yeah. You weren't beating the Astros. Oh, you beat the Astros.
Even that was one of the. Was that the only World Series where the road team won every game?
I think so.
Yeah.
410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Who stays unemployed longer, Davey Martinez or Mike Rizzo? Mm. That to me is the question, because Mike Rizzo is much more accomplished than Davey Martinez. I think Davey Martinez wagon is hitched to Mike Rizzo's.
So here's where I would say it's Davey Martinez, just because. Is it? Are you talking about just getting a managerial job?
I'm talking about managerial job. Okay, because I'm glad you qualified that, yeah. because anybody would make him a bench coach, third base coach. Yeah, you're right.
And then Rizzo's only going for one job, which is GM.
Yeah. So who gets their job, yesterday's job back quicker, the manager and GM?
I don't like either one of them.
You don't like Rizzo?
No. I think he should go back with his brother Frank doing prank phone calls. Frank Rizzo here. Remember the Jerky Boys with Frank Rizzo? Hey there, Milky Licker. Hey, Beefy Nipples. What are you doing? Anyway, sorry.
I like Rizzo. I do. I like some of the moves he made. Of course, you can argue. If you argue he only had great draft picks when he had number one picks, then you can make the same argument here. Although I don't think that's the argument, because Colton Cowser wasn't the number one overall draft pick. And who did they just get?
I mean, you have two, right? Jackson Holliday and Andrew Rutschman.
Gunnar Henderson wasn't the number one overall draft pick. So, yeah, you can't make that argument here. You can't make that argument. They had great picks other than the one-on-ones. 410-583-1057 is the number. Let me tell you what I think happened in D.C., Jeremy. This is me speculating. I think Mike Rizzo was supposed to fire Davey Martinez and wouldn't.
I mean, that's... It's an interesting take, because I can't argue it. Yeah,
I think he was supposed to fire him, and he couldn't, and he wouldn't. And so how often does a GM and a manager leave at the same time in the middle of the season? At the end of the season, yes, we evaluated where we are, where we're going. We don't like either one of you. Okay.
How many times did a GM get fired right before the draft? Like, we have a GM... The Toronto Raptors let their GM go, and they said, can you finish making the... He wanted to finish making their draft picks, right. And they allowed him, even after letting him go. So, I mean, could he have said, screw y'all, guess who I'm taking? No, I mean, he did the right thing. He did right by them.
Well, you knew he wasn't going to do that, because he wanted a job again.
Absolutely.
He's going to be evaluated for his next job based on what he just did.
But you know...
And his character on top of that.
And not to compare apples and oranges, but in our business, it's very rare for somebody to let you know you're being canned and then let you go on the air and say goodbye to everyone. You know, it's happened.
NST, you know, I resigned before the shift, and they told me to finish this.
That's very rare.
It was not the owner. It was
usually get
the
fired.
GM. It was the GM.
After your session or on your day off?
Well, I didn't get fired. I left.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he said.
No, well, I got fired.
Okay, we're going to move on now.
I got fired I from know you that nine-finger douchebag.
Yes. Mike Bordick, Oriole Hall of Famer, would join us at 8:45.
He's got 10 fingers. I know that.
But on the other side is the World of Stupid with Jeremy Cohn.
Should throw this jackass in there. All right. So we are going to talk about semen injections and why you shouldn't get them.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm
convinced.
We're going to talk.
For the story, I'm convinced.
Is karma a real thing? I'm going to tell you it's not, because of what happened to this cat. And this is just an unbelievable story. And I briefly have to go back to Ace Bailey's agent and some of the requests he had made for the Utah Jazz. Why is he your agent? He's not fighting for you. He's fighting for himself. I tell you why when we come back in the World of Stupid.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right. On audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Start off with Ace Bailey's agent. We did a story on him the other week where he was... in his car videoing himself, where he was like mean mugging the camera, mm-hmm. like, what's up? What are you going to do? And you're looking at it like, what is this guy doing? He's just filming himself, making this face with this side kind of look, like he's smirking, or I don't know what the hell that was supposed to be. Well,
that's the I've arrived look.
his agent is now asking for ridiculous things. But the weird part about this is he's not asking for things for Ace Bailey. He's asking for things for himself.
Yeah.
Here you go. The son of Ace Bailey's manager won't get to be a guest coach for the Jazz this summer on the summer league team after the NBA raised some concerns with the idea. Omar Cooper Jr. is the son of Ace Bailey's manager, Omar Cooper, and the Jazz had hired the younger Cooper to help ease the former Rutgers star transition into the NBA. ESPN's Tim McMahon reported, but the league grew concerned about the idea. Cooper Jr. just finished his time at McNeese State and is planning on going into coaching, and the Jazz wanted him to work as an unpaid guest coach during the Salt Lake Summer Leagues. And the league said, no, we're not now negotiating for agents' kids to be on the team to coach. That's not what we're doing. We're not opening up Pandora's box here where you're going to have all these agents requesting stuff for themselves. And I don't know how Ace Bailey is, like, he's okay with all this. He's an NBA body and athlete, a great teammate too. Jazz coach Will Hardy told ESPN, I've had nothing but positive reviews from all the coaches and his teammates his first week talking about Ace Bailey. Because all the reports were he didn't want to go to the Jazz. He didn't want to interview with them. He didn't want to go to the Bob, I almost said Bobcats, the Hornets. He didn't want to go to Charlotte. That's why LaMelo Ball was posting trash things on his Instagram page. But this agent asking for your son to be an assistant coach, this sounds like the stuff that goes on in college,
yeah,
where the AAU coach all of a sudden ends up on the bench of a college team, which, I mean, we know what that all is, too. That's some selfishness that goes on there, but that's what happens. And some of the players allow it to happen because they love those coaches. What do you think about this? Asking for your son to be an assistant coach on the summer league team. Now, this isn't an 8-year-old kid or anything like that. He's asking for his grown-ass son to be a coach. Do you have a problem with it?
How old is his son? 22, 23, you think? Maybe. Now, we could assume that senior asked for this on his own, but what if Ace and Junior had their own relationship, and this is something that he wanted to leverage?
Very well could be. I mean, that's not something
it's natural for us to instantly go to the dad. I did. It wasn't until just now I'm looking at his age like, well, wait a minute. What if Ace...
But he worked at McNeese State, and he did. Maybe there's something from their childhood, too. I don't know.
Or just maybe meeting them through the whole process of hiring his dad.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? I don't like agents asking for things for themselves. I don't. But, you know, if Ace has a relationship with Junior, maybe that's what it is.
All right, let me get to this story. On April 28th, James Farthing claimed a $167.3 million jackpot, the largest in Kentucky lottery history. He had purchased the winning $2 ticket at a convenience store in Georgetown, a city where he shares an address with Linda Grizzle, his 77-year-old mother.
How much was it worth?
$176.3
million. Oh.
And this is where I'm going to tell you karma is not a real thing, no matter how much we want to make it a thing. This cat, God, let me get how many times he's been arrested. So it said, flanked by Grizzle and his girlfriend, a beaming Farthing was presented with an oversized check by lottery officials, announced that a mother and son would be splitting the nine-figure windfall. Farthing was 50, was not quoted in the Kentucky Lottery press release, which was only identified him by his middle and last names because Farthing is a career criminal. Criminal. He's been categorized as persistent felony offender. He has a record that spans over 35 years and includes 9 counties from every corner of Kentucky's penal code. According to court records, Farthing strangled a girlfriend, sold cocaine to an undercover police informant, escaped from prison work detail, bribed correction officers to deliver Xanax and oxycodone into a state facility, possessed stolen firearms, and even involved his mother in a marijuana smuggling plot for which they both were indicted. He's not a good guy, and he just won $167.3 million. Look at all these mugshots, Rob.
Wow.
And now he's a very wealthy man, at least for a short while until he runs through this money, which so many lottery winners do. They run through because they don't know what to do with it. It's almost like these 18-year-old kids that you haven't had money your whole life, and someone gives you money, and then all of a sudden it's like, now I'm spending like some goon out there just wasting all of it. You need to look at go back.
There's buying a house, paying off my bills, buying a house, and just live off the interest. That's what I'm going to do.
Are you still going to work?
Yeah.
I think I would too.
I would still work.
But I would always have that FU money to say
here?
When I don't want to work.
What are you asking me? What question? What question? Of course I still get up in the morning and do sports talk radio. You kidding me?
Here, maybe.
No, I would.
Oh, by the way, I didn't get to do it here.
This is not hard.
Rob, they didn't have enough room for all of his mugshots in the one photo, so there's a second one.
There's more.
But wait, there's more. James Farthing, career criminal, now wealthy man. All right, last story, and this is a PSA for everyone out there. And you guys should know better than this. We've talked about it before on this show. Intravenous injections of semen into your back. It's not a good treatment, at least what the headline says, are not a good treatment for chronic back pain. Now, I've got chronic back pain, and I'm telling you, I'd be willing to try almost anything to
maybe
get this back pain to go away.
Semen injections is the cause for your back pain.
Stop grabbing your ankles.
Maybe.
My back hurts, Doc. What is it? These damn semen injections I keep getting. Off of 83. One man has found out the hard way about why you should leave the pain relief to the medical professionals. That's right. Seeking a cure for his chronic back pain. This guy decided to inject his own sperm into his back. Like, all right, look, I've had enough of this. Everybody's doing their research online. Who the hell's sitting there going, I wonder if my semen would kill this back pain. I should try injecting it in there.
If you think your semen is a pain reliever, then you think way too highly of yourself. Yeah. It's magical.
While we know back pain can be excruciating and can't imagine the pain you must be going through to take such extreme measures, it doesn't take someone with a PhD to realize injecting your own sperm into your body is not a good idea. I don't know if we have any public service announcement commercials. Maybe Ben Stiller could tell people about it, or John Bon Jovi. Hey, guys, John Bon Jovi here. You don't want to inject semen into your back. Like, what are we doing? ABC News said an unarmed man from Ireland was hospitalized when he injected himself with his own sperm. The Irish Medical Journal explains how the man needed medical attention after he complained about severe, sudden onset lower back pain. Yeah, buddy, that's probably from what you did. Lifting a heavy steel object 3 days prior, his back pain was ongoing, to which, there it goes. You get the little light bulb pop up. Semen in my back. That's got to cure it.
Why? Did he say why?
No, he just thought
that was a good idea.
Yes. He then revealed he'd been injecting himself with his own semen for the past 18 months. How much? How much? Are we using, it's in Europe.
It's not working. Let me up the dose.
Are we using the metric system? Maybe he was off with the measurements. He should have been using our system.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. How many milliliters in a gallon? I don't know. Anyway, that's your world of stupid. Please don't inject semen into your back.
Mike Borden, yours or anybody's?
Yours.
Okay. Mike Borden joins us at 8:45, but on the other side, Bleacher Report did a Mount Rushmore for the Baltimore Ravens. A certain Super Bowl MVP? Omit it. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. 8:32 in the a.m., Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. The Bleacher Report did a Mount Rushmore of every NFL team since 2000. This is not all time. This is of the past quarter century. The Ravens' Mount Rushmore goes as follows. Quarterback Lamar Jackson, linebacker Ray Lewis, offensive tackle Jonathan Ogden, safety Ed Reed. I don't have a problem with any of this. None. I would love for Marshall Yonder to be on, but it's only four. I would love for Terrell Suggs to be on, but it's only four. And if you ask me to weigh which one deserves a spot, if there were five, I'd say Yonder over Suggs, to be quite honest with you. But there's only four spots, and I got no problem with these four.
And the four being the three big ones that nobody should ever have a problem with, right?
Right.
Ed Reed, John Ogden, Ray Lewis. Nobody should ever have a problem with them being on the Mount Rushmore.
Arguably the greatest of their position of all time. All right, arguably.
And can I tell you something?
What?
Not a one of those guys has two MVPs, so you shouldn't have a problem with Lamar being on there either. He should have three.
Oh, my God.
So
can we stick to the top?
So, anyway, No, but like again, the only other guy, like if we talked about it, Yandas, linemen don't accrue stats, but John Ogden's widely graded graded out as one of the best offensive linemen, best left tackles in the history of sport, maybe the best at his position.
Yes.
That's debatable. The other two guys I don't think are as debatable, but you can. Ray Lewis, the greatest inside linebacker.
I don't know who idiot's debating that. And I'm sorry, I don't.
Ed Reed, the greatest safety of all time.
I try not to call people idiots for their opinion, but so the only pretty idiotic.
There's three other guys that should be in this conversation, and Flacco's not one of them for any of you guys who are calling
You know what's funny? Bleacher Report doesn't mention him.
They shouldn't, and I mean, he won a Super Bowl. He should be beloved here for years, but he's got no business being on that Mount Rushmore. With all these other players. Now, it goes Yanda, Suggs, because of the greatness, and they both are going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
The other guy that can't go on there, that should be mentioned, is the cat that they just cut, Justin Tucker, because he was the greatest at his position. But I don't know anybody that wants to put a kicker on their Mount Rushmore.
I'm not putting a kicker on my Mount Rushmore.
Again, I feel like you got to bring up his name for what he's accomplished here. All that's gone by the wayside because of, that's exactly what he was doing, Rob.
I had a circle in motion in my wrist. I'm sorry.
this is correct. And again, I know some people go, well, only MVPs get, or quarterbacks get MVPs. And I would listen to that. This cat's been, he's in a league with Pat Mahomes, who people widely consider the greatest quarterback to play this game.
He's a generational talent.
Yeah.
Generational talent. When he retires, you're going to tell people stories about him, and they're not going to believe what you're saying. They're not going to believe that his teammate now, Van Noy, when he played for the Patriots, had him in the backfield and reached for him and came up with air, hugged himself. You know when you was a kid, you turn around like you were making out with somebody and you was just hugging yourself? That's what Van Noy did when trying to tackle Lamar Jackson. If you come on, dude, stop. It's like this. We want to say quarterbacks shouldn't be graded or rated for themselves for winning Super Bowls, but whenever you make a comment about Joe Flacco, you bring up the Super Bowl. Which one are we gonna do here? Which one? Because Joe Flacco had, look, bless him, he had a month. Jeremy, Joe Flacco's career comes down to a month. Without that month, then we're not even considering Joe Flacco. And I'm not saying take it away from him, but that's what it was. His career was a month.
Yeah.
His whole career, everything else was meh. He was phenomenal for 1 month.
He was, I mean,
he just picked the best month to do it.
He went 11-0 in touchdowns to interceptions in the postseason. The only other person to do that is Joe Montana, and he won the Super Bowl on top of it. That's a magical season that you're never going to take away from him.
Magical month.
But that does not put him anywhere near this because he got a singular Super Bowl when you look at the other accomplishments the guys have had. So I'm sorry. Like you, if you're a multiple MVP winner, you better have more multiple MVP winners or some of the best players at their positions to ever play the game to not show up on this team's, you know, Mount Rushmore.
And because in fans' hearts, Super Bowls matter. If he wins one, definitely two. Lamar Jackson will go down as the greatest Raven of all time.
Yeah.
Yes. Because without the Super Bowl, I could argue that he probably will become the greatest Raven of all time without one. But in the eyes of fans, that's an opinion-based statement. Being the greatest Raven of all time is all opinion. If he wins a Super Bowl, definitely two, he will become the great. He will go down in history as the greatest Raven of all time. And you know who will co-sign that? The guys that you consider to be the greatest Ravens of all time. Ray Lewis will co-sign that.
Yep.
Jonathan Ogden will co-sign that. Ed Reed would co-sign it. They might tell you that now. But winning Super Bowls matter. And when you have a guy in Ed Reed, Ray Lewis was 1-2, who was arguably the greatest at his position, you got to win one.
Yeah, and again, like, I know people want to hold Super Bowls in this unbelievably high caliber of what it means. Who's the best baseball player you watch in your generation?
Barry Bonds.
He ain't never win one.
We've been to one, that's it.
He ain't win. And he, you know, he's the best player, right?
Best player I've ever saw in my life.
This is a team game. So when you start talking about Super Bowls, like, you're not really quantifying how good a player was. You're saying that he was on a great team that won the Super Bowl. Now, what if he had a huge impact like Flacco did in the postseason? Clearly. Yeah, you tip your cap, but all of a sudden it doesn't elevate them above other players that have better careers.
Chipper Jones said once in a series against the Atlanta Braves and San Francisco Giants, Barry Bonds saw three strikes. Three of them in 12 at-bats. Hit three home runs.
And And if you want to go the other way, I mean, Roger Clemens has 7 Cy Youngs, and neither one of these guys are sniffing the Hall of Fame right now because of the steroid accusations that go along with them. But that being said, like, you know greatness when you see it. You know good players, and you know when a guy's having, you know, a career year. Flacco, as you pointed out, had a career, what would you say, a month, 6 weeks, whatever you want to put it into. It was great. But there's a reason why they moved on from him to get this kid, who all he's done is just come in and been one of the most dominant players in the league.
410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Rob Long, Jeremy Kahn, Ed Norris will be back tomorrow. Yeah, this is the Mount Rushmore. Simple and plain. To me, there's no debates. The only person that I feel bad that got left off is Marshall Yonder, because I think Marshall Yonder is arguably one of the best guards of all time, to be quite honest with you. You know, I feel bad that you can't have 5 spots. He's the only one I feel bad about. I think Suggs could go on. Mm-hmm. I feel bad about Yonder.
I mean, yeah, because he's a great player, but he just plays one of those positions that's not going to get the tip of the cap the way that they should. I mean, an interior lineman isn't going to show up on most teams, Mount Rushmore. There are a handful of guys that you do have to point out, and depending on the history of the team, you'll find it. But again, like, we talk about John Ogden, what do we know? He dominated the best pass rushers in football. You know, we know what he was doing on the outside and how good this team was running behind him. We know it here. Maybe nationally some other people don't know that name because it's a lineman. But when you start bringing up skill position players or guys that accrue statistics, tackles, interceptions, yeah, it's easy to quantify that against someone else where you're like, oh, how many sacks did he give up? Well, did he? How many pressures? You know, all the things that Rob loves, all these ancillary statistics.
No, I don't. No, I do not.
How many QB touches?
No, I do not. Yeah. He rushed them out. He pressured them out of the pocket. Have you seen these cats nowadays? Have you seen them, Jeremy? Go ahead. We got Lamar out of the pocket. Yeah, and he picked up 120 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns. Those stats don't matter anymore. Those matter when you had the statuesque quarterbacks. Nowadays, go ahead. Get Joe Burrow out of the pocket. See how that's going to do for you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
He's going to eat you alive.
Well,
now nowadays, even Sam Darnold beats you out of the pocket. Who's the cat in the Chargers?
Herbert.
Rush him out of the pocket. Yeah. That's what he's going to do. On the run, he's going to throw it 60 yards and drop it in the shoebox. Those stats don't matter at all anymore. Bring his ass down. That's what you got to do. 410-583-1057. Daily Line with Jeremy Kahn at 9:30. On the other side, talking some baseball. Oriole Hall of Fame in broadcast.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
That's the Mike Bordick on the Fan. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Rob Long, Jeremy Kahn, Ed Norris will be back tomorrow. Joining us right now, courtesy of the Window Nation guest hotline from Be More Baseball Podcast, he is Orioles Hall of Famer Mike Bordick. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, good morning, Rob.
Good morning, man. Every time they pull you right back in, don't they? 3-game sweep down in Atlanta. Now they're 40-49, and now you're thinking, so you're saying we got a chance.
Yeah, no, it was a fun weekend, man, though. I mean, golly, so many good things happened, right? I think Westberg getting back in the lineup again and coming up in a big way. It was nice to see O'Neill contribute as well. But it's always going to come back to the pitching, right? And Charlie Morton once again stepped up and started the series off right. And this was an important series because they just came off a tough one against Texas. You know, they started that series off really well, but man, they could not close the door at the end. And so it was unfortunate, tough loss there. More catchers getting injured. I mean, my goodness, but huge series win and nice to see Rodgers really close it out with another sensational performance. So a lot of good things, man, a lot of good things to be excited about. Another tough series.
Hey, when you look at it, it is kind of interesting to look at how they played. They're still in the same situation of chasing all these teams. I mean, how big of an uphill battle is this for them to actually get back into what we believe to be the playoff race?
Yeah, you know, anything's possible in this crazy game of baseball. And you know, you look up, and now the Guardians, they've lost like 10 in a row. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And the Yankees, they stink at the top. I mean, so there are a lot of – I don't know if it's parity or just bad baseball or just too many injuries that teams are having a really hard time overcoming. I know there's a lack of pitching out there right now, so Orioles pretty lucky that at least they got a few guys – they're throwing the ball pretty well. So it's tough to say, Jeremy. I think it's going to be really hard to overcome.
Yeah.
And right now I'm getting excited about the fact that the Orioles could potentially trade Charlie Morton. Right? That might be their biggest value chip. You know what I mean?
Here with Mike Bordick, Oriole Hall of Famer. Mike, let's go back to something. We can't gloss over this. If they get back into contention, they may not want to trade Charlie Morton. Let's go back from last year's trade deadline all the way up to maybe, what, mid-May? Trevor Rogers and Charlie Morton, who just pitched gems in Atlanta, were the two biggest head scratches that we couldn't chase out of town quick enough. And now look at them.
Yeah. No, I hear you. But you need more than two guys that we keep our fingers crossed, right? I'm not saying either one of these guys is a wrap guarantee. I'm happy for Rogers. I think he's young enough.
No, I'm just Charlie speaking Morton. About their turnaround. No, I'm just speaking about their turnaround. Whether you trade them or not is up to them. It's just an unbelievable turnaround by both of them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Can Sagano turn it back around? Let's hope. Oh. Because as two come up, two go back down. You know what I'm saying? We got two struggling pitchers. Still got guys on the IL. I just think there's just so many question marks, man. But, yeah, I'm happy as heck that those guys have made the turnaround and the ability to make the adjustments, because that is truly the name of the game at the major league level. If you can't make adjustments, you're going to have a real hard time, and both definitely have.
Hey, Bordy, as we're looking at the opportunity for Jackson Holliday to get in the All-Star game, we kind of chatted about it a little bit. Seems like there was a little play with the manager there, kind of making sure guys get into the, you know, get drafted and get into the game, as far as Chisholm coming off the injury report, Alex Bregman still hurt, Brandon Lau just got hurt. I think the likelihood for Jackson Holliday to get in is very good. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like he's deserving, man. What a bright young star that I think, you know, everyone in baseball knows all about him. So, and I do think he's deserving. I think he's made incredible improvements this year. There's a sense of urgency. He's just got a better understanding, I think, for the speed of the major league game. And you're seeing what he can potentially, what the potential is with his bat, you know. So I like him. I hope he does get in. And I don't care if it's because somebody else got hurt or this or that. I think he deserves it. You know, as much as any other second baseman that's going to get a chance to play in the All-Star game this year.
It was Mike Bordick, Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Mike, what's the key, you think, to this, the turnaround of this bullpen? I know Dominguez gave up the solo home run yesterday, but they've been pretty solid over the last month or so.
Yeah, they really have. You know, I think they weathered a really tough storm, you know, when they were having to eat up a lot of innings and, of course, the 16-game stretch. And I think being able to bounce through that, these guys kind of showing their resiliency. They all have great arms. You know, I think Kittredge is a big stabilizing piece out there as well. But, yeah, they got big arms, man, and they can compete with anybody. And I think when they're rested, it's nice to see Cano back in there, kind of working his way back up to try to get high leverage spots. So we've seen them, you know, at their best, and when they're rolling, they're as good as any bullpen in the game. And I think we saw that over the weekend.
And what do you make of this? I mean, we look at the AL East, you were kind of talking about it. Teams going in totally different directions. We talked about the Rays have to be road warriors the entire half of the second half of the season, which is ridiculous. But I was watching the Blue Jays this weekend. They strike out less than any other team in baseball. They hit better with runners in scoring position than any team in baseball. I can't believe I'm saying that. And their bullpen has been surprisingly good. It's been almost like a strength for them as well. What are your thoughts on the Jays?
Yeah, you know, I think they fit perfectly with teams that just ride the roller coaster, because I just believe they're going to come crashing down like they always do. You know, they've always had great players, great young players. Their bullpen has definitely been their weakness for a number of years now. And for them to finally kind of regain that, it's going to be interesting to see how aggressive and do they truly believe in this team, you know, what they're going to do at the deadline. So, you know, teams are trying to rise to the top. I in my mind, I think there's no way that the Orioles can get there. But I still am waiting for them, and this could be the start of it, you know, a 6 or 8 game win streak. And if they can put together a nice win streak before the All-Star break, you know, then we're going to be like going, now what are we going to do? And just let these guys run wild. I obviously, this trade deadline is, I think, vitally important for Mike Elias and the decision that he has to make, whether or not, does this team try to push to try to get into the postseason, or is this, you know, reset for 2026? A lot of weight, you know, is going to be on these decisions coming up.
Mike Bordick, tell us all about the podcast, Be More Baseball Podcast.
Yeah, Be More Baseball Podcast has been going great. We have a really interesting guest coming up this week, and I'm not going to say who it is. I want it to be a surprise, but, you know, he's back in the game and got incredible insight on both the Orioles and many other teams in Major League Baseball. So it's going to be a fun podcast. We're going to be talking about the injuries. Is this unbelievable, the amount of injuries? And this has to be a record. You guys might know by now. The amount of catchers on the IL. I mean, incredible.
The Orioles have 33% of the league's catchers on the IL. The entire league, they own 33% of those catchers that are hurt.
It's just really, really amazing. It's too bad. Yeah, terrible. It's terrible. So a lot to talk about, and good information on Be More Baseball Podcast. And you know Coleman digs a little deeper than most. So always fun. Always a fun show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, Joe, can I get a shovel, please, right now?
What'd I do?
No, my shovel goes to Trippy.
Oh.
So Trippy was sexing me about, Jeremy, where's Mount Rushmore?
South Dakota.
How many people are on Mount Rushmore?
Oh, one, two, three, four.
Four people. So Trippy was saying that I was dogging Joe Flacco. I said, what did I say about Flacco that wasn't true? So he started repeating everything that I said.
Hello.
I said, Trippy, I said that. He said, that's why there should be like 10 people on the Mount Rushmore list. I said, Trippy, people on the Mount Rushmore conversation. I said, Trippy, that would be called a top 10 list.
Like,
you look like a fool if you called Mount Rushmore and you named more than four people.
Yeah, it'd be like if somebody said, hey, who do you want in your golf foursome? And then all of a sudden you listed 10 people.
Exactly.
That won't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. So if we did a list of, if we did a 10 people for Mount Rushmore, we had to rename it to the top 10 list. Not a Mount Rushmore game.
It's the people on the backside. You never see them, you know?
Yeah.
Backside of the mountain.
Is that what that's? It's on the other side?
It is. Nobody
that's
ever
where
looks.
The other six
Nobody
heads
ever
are.
Looks.
Which six presidents are back there? We got Polk,
Coolidge. Jeremy Kahn's Daily Line at 9:30, but on the other side. Hey, should somebody get some credit for this Trevor Rogers turnaround? We beat him up enough. Baltimore's big bad morning show on the Fan.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall is back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.